It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The capture of ousted Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro over the weekend has triggered a wave of reactions across the world and here in Wisconsin.
Maduro appeared in federal court on Monday in New York City. He pleaded not guilty to federal drug trafficking charges.
Reactions to the Trump administration's military operation are divided. Some are praising the removal of Maduro from power. Others are protesting the U.S. military raid. These are sounds from the Wisconsin State Capitol on Saturday.
No blood! No blood for oil!
That audio from WORT in Madison. In just a bit, we'll hear from a professor of rhetoric about the potential impact of President Trump's hardline language toward Maduro and Venezuela.
First, we're joined by Patrick Iber, an associate professor of history at UW-Madison who studies 20th century Latin America and U.S. foreign relations. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
In that clip of the protest in Madison, we heard the chant, "No blood for oil." The White House said that its military operation was justified in part by Venezuela having stolen U.S. oil. Can you talk about the words in the chant and the relation to oil as Venezuela has the biggest oil reserves in the world?
Sure. President Trump has been quite explicit that recovering what he describes as stolen oil was part of the picture that led him to make this decision. I am joining you from Santiago, Chile at the moment, and here on the morning after Maduro's arrest, there's a large Venezuelan diasporic population here in Chile. About 1 million Venezuelans live here now, having fled Maduro's regime, and they were out honking horns and celebrating in public. So, the mood was very different from the one that you captured there in your audio in Madison.
Yeah. Can you help us lay the groundwork here? What has been the U.S. historical attitude toward Venezuela through time?
Towards Venezuela and towards Latin America in general, the U.S. has often had a kind of paternalistic and interventionist attitude. This is what the protesters are responding to. They know that that there's a long history of U.S. interference in Latin America to overthrow governments that it doesn't like, to act in ways that correspond to its interests rather than the interests of those countries. And so, while there were, as I said, Venezuelans who have suffered because of Maduro and his regime celebrating that moment, I understand and share the concerns of others who are worried that this represents a kind of new attitude of dominance that Trump is trying to project in the region.
But there are many other countries with an authoritarian regime in the world or other countries that traffic drugs into the U.S. Why specifically Venezuela?
Yeah, this is exactly right. In fact, Trump just pardoned the former president of Honduras, who was convicted of drug trafficking, saying that he was targeted by the Biden administration unfairly. He didn't do his homework at all on that. That was a very fair conviction. And Trump is impulsive in 100 different ways. Why Venezuela? I think Venezuela worked as at the convergence of interests within the Trump administration. If you think about the different constituencies that could be served by this action, on the one hand, okay, Trump says it's about oil, we'll take his word on that. For Marco Rubio, of course, with his political base in South Florida, removing the authoritarian but nominally left-wing governments of Nicaragua, Venezuela, and especially Cuba is a goal of long standing. And I assume that Cuba will be very much in their eyes next. And then for somebody like Stephen Miller, if changes in Venezuela make it possible to deport Venezuelans from the United States, then that serves his eliminationist agenda with respect to deportation. So I think that Venezuela was a choice that where there was like a convergence of different streams that make up the Trump administration. That's why they made that their first target.
So these military actions over the weekend, they might bring up comparisons to previous interventions in South and Central America, like the invasion of Cuba, Bay of Pigs. It could be, you know, invasion of Panama in 89 to overthrow General Manuel Noriega. Are there, you know, useful comparisons here, or what is what we're seeing right now totally different?
Well, it's certainly not totally different. And, you know, and Trump even, it used to be something that people would hide from, like President Obama declared the end of the Monroe Doctrine, saying this sort of heavy-handed U.S. interventionism should be a thing of the past. Trump has talked about what I find totally embarrassingly calls the Dunroe Doctrine, that of reassertion of U.S. rights to interfere. He seems to sort of embrace the idea of being a kind of hemispheric power. But many people will experience that as hemispheric bullying and will respond accordingly. Already, the government of Mexico, for example, lodged a complaint at the United Nations saying that this action was a violation of Article 2 of the United Nations prohibiting the, you know, the interventions in the sovereignty of other countries. So we'll have to see. I mean, there is a lot of Maduro is very unpopular throughout the region, including among governments, certainly of the right and of the center. But to a certain degree, he's was unpopular on the left, too, because he was such a kind of weight around the regional left. And so I think that the response, such as it is, isn't going to be about the defense of Maduro in particular, but about the principles of sovereignty, which Trump is explicitly declaring are not interesting to him.
Patrick, thank you for this context. Thank you for joining us from Chile.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Patrick Eiber, Associate Professor of History at UW-Madison. Now for a look at President Trump's hardline language he uses toward Maduro in Venezuela. We called up Sarah McKinnon, a professor of rhetoric, politics, and culture in the Department of Communication Arts at UW-Madison. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What have you been noticing in the White House's rhetoric surrounding Venezuela in the lead up to this weekend's military capture of Maduro?
You know, I think what's really fascinating about this moment is the staging that's happened before this, rhetorically, discursively, to get us to this moment. And so if we think about the way in which we've continued to hear more about narco-terrorism as a problem in the region, as a problem in Venezuela, this really begins in some ways with the 2020 indictment of Maduro on grounds of narco-terrorism, and then the staging of narcotics and the narcotics industry as a terrorist organization. So cartels in Mexico, cartels connected to Colombia as terrorist organizations. This staging work really gets us to the moment where we are today. Really, when we look at the action that happened on Saturday, in explicit terms, it was a law enforcement action, as the administration is articulating it, to address narco-terrorism. And so this part, I think, is really important. Now, those who are in opposition to this framing would maybe think about the action more as a military action or an action of war, an action of intervention. And so here, as a scholar who studies what words do, how words matter in the world, I think we have a really interesting moment.
In this moment, we heard President Trump say plans to run Venezuela now that his administration has captured President Maduro. That word run, it has been all over and it's causing confusion. What do you make of the phrase, you know, whether it's run or we're in charge?
Yeah, I think that caught the ears of many, many experts in the U.S. as well as internationally. This is something new that we have heard. You know, as Patrick Eiber discussed a moment ago, interventions, actions like what happened on Saturday are not new in some ways. Panama, Iraq, Grenada, we can think of moments to track back to. But what did seem new is the phrasing of run Venezuela. Now, of course, Marco Rubio has kind of moved us back a little bit on that and said that the administration will be working with the Venezuelan now president Delcy Rodriguez to oversee what's happening, but it'll be interesting to see what that looks like in the next few weeks, in the next few months, what the coordination, the involvement looks like. And of course, we have also heard further threats from the administration that if they don't do what the U.S. wants, there may be more military action.
Sarah, bringing this all back to Wisconsin, could President Trump's hardline rhetoric that we're hearing, could it affect Venezuelan immigrants who have made a life here?
Yeah, I think that's a really significant point to think about. There are many Venezuelan individuals, families in Wisconsin, in the United States, some with permanent residency, some who are now citizens, but many who are not, many who are in precarious status in terms of their ability to stay in the U.S. And so I think we're going to have to pay attention to what happens in relation to the immigration rhetoric that's also present, the refugee and immigration rhetoric. As Professor Eber mentioned a moment ago, Stephen Miller's interest in moving immigrants out of the United States, I think, is in line with what we're seeing. And so we could see a push to really suggest that Venezuelans who have arrived a few years ago must now return to Venezuela. I think that is definitely on many people's minds right now.
Sarah, thank you so much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Sarah McKinnon is a professor of rhetoric, politics, and culture in the Department of Communication Arts and faculty director of Latin American, Caribbean, and Iberian Studies at UW-Madison. And earlier, we heard from UW-Madison Associate Professor of History, Patrick Iber. We've been talking about the U.S. military operation in Venezuela and the possibility of other overseas interventions.